I think there's enough for two cookies per person at least. Yes, please eat. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam borei minei mezonot. Amen. It's a cookie sermon. Yes, eat. It's a sermon you have to taste. I can't promise, there's no about nuts and gluten-free and all of that stuff. If you can eat regular cookies, you can eat regular cookies, but sorry. I want to hear crunching. If you need seconds, raise your hand. We cornered the market on Vafalim in Northern Virginia. I'll wait till everybody has. Yeah, delicious. During the sermon, and if any time you want another cookie, just raise your hand and it will be delivered to you. Take a taste of your history. Take a taste of how one Jewish family coped with change and transition in the face of adversity. Take a taste of your Jewish present this Shabbat, even as together we explore your Jewish past. As we embark on a new adult education year for our Life Learning is for Everyone program, our topic, Transitions Happen, Can You Make Change?, challenges us to use a Jewish lens to explore the nature and impact of transitions. And this being my first sermon after my latest mini sabbatical, I thought it would be more memorable and a change of pace for all of you, for you to taste the sermon while you listen. Years from now, you will not remember the sermon. You'll sort of say, remember when she brought cookies to temple? The cookie you are tasting or watching others taste is a piece of Jewish survival, Israel's military history, and a staple in the Jewish kosher parav world for Jewish families keeping kosher to have a non-dairy dessert after a meat meal. And now, the rest of the story. According to a family historian, Esther Hecht, the story begins with Lazar Rokach, who moved to Vienna, Austria during World War I. Lazar opened a sweets factory in which everything was made by hand. He made crisp Austrian layers of waffle cookies by hand with a machine that had these beautiful cross hatches, and the man who was in charge of the machine would rotate the plates so that the waffles would get just so perfectly crisp. Can you imagine if I didn't give you a cookie and started talking about them? One of the employees made the waffles, another spread the cream and stacked the wafers. A third employee cut the stacks into rectangles, and then batches of wafers were wrapped and boxed by hand and sold throughout Vienna. I want to thank the cookie servers. You are wonderful. Lazar and his wife stayed in Vienna in the 1930s, despite the obviously growing threat from the Nazis, because their business was thriving. People loved their cookies. But in 1938, as the family historian Esther tells it, Lazar became aware that their days in Austria were numbered. And he was able to obtain two prized possessions for himself and his wife, immigration certificates to Palestine. Nobody in Austria could get those immigration certificates. So you ask, how was Laser able to do it? Because, the story goes, he was a capitalist. He promised to bring his waffle machinery to contribute to Palestine's need for a growing economy. And so the Rokachs escaped Austria before Hitler invaded in March 1938 because the British wanted cookies. With his waffle machinery in hand, Laser went to work for Liber, one of Palestine's major sweet manufacturers. By the 1970s, Liber merged with better-known Elite Chocolate, and many of the waffelim you're eating tonight are still being made by Elite. For the Rokach family, Laser's machines passed on to his son Max in 1954. Max opened up his own business, a factory in, of all places, the ultra-Orthodox neighborhood of B'nai Brak, east of Tel Aviv. Now, most people are not welcomed to B'nai Brak unless they're ultra-Orthodox, but the Rokachs were because they were descendants of the 17th century revered rabbi Elazar Rokach, the chief rabbi of Brody in Amsterdam, and they were descendants of the great Belzer Rebbe. That's what we call Yichus. The people of B'nai Brak wanted such rabbinic royal descendants in their neighborhood. They gave them immediately ultra-Orthodox kosher certification, and Rokachman LTD was a thriving enterprise. Their number one product in their brand called Man, M-A-N, was waffling. That's what you're eating now, waffling. And waffling is still the biggest seller, Man waffling, in the Orthodox world, especially the Chabad community, from the Rokach family to this day. From a sweet Viennese life, one family escaped the Nazis. They escaped what could have been a bitter and tragic future. Life wasn't easy in early Palestine and early Israel, but their brand, Man Waffelim, especially the ones coated in chocolate in a red, white, and blue package, became a national favorite. Chocolate-covered waffling, my favorite. Not very possible to get here in Northern Virginia. This is not considered a waffling territory. My housekeeper went to Safeway. She said there wasn't one in the whole store. So the story continues. In order to get business, Max and his wife Penina bought a little Israeli-made banged-up van called a Susita. Have any of you ever been in a Susita? I used to drive in a Susita in the early 1970s. It was practically falling apart. But Penina used to drive up and down and across the little fledgling state of Israel, delivering Max's waffling to kiosks and stores all over Israel. But the military history and the survival of the Jewish people and the strength of Israel's army came from the fact that Penina decided that she would deliver Man chocolate-covered waffelim to all the military bases in Israel. And so every soldier in the state of Israel who went to a kiosk on their military base grew up eating and tasting chocolate-covered waffling. Some believe that Israel won wars because of the waffling. In the true spirit of change, not only did they produce chocolate, they produced vanilla, and actually second choice now in Israel is lemon, although second choice in America is vanilla. And then later on, they went to coffee-flavored waffelim and not an American favorite, halva-flavored waffelim. Wouldn't be my favorite either. And then, of course, in 1991, to show change and transition and how modern they were, they brought out a whole wheat product. In January of 2015, the company celebrated their 60th year. Today, 92% of Israeli households eat waffling. So one might say that waffling built the state of Israel. Now, you might want to know who are the number one eaters of waffling? The Austrians, who call them still waffle cookies. Israelis, by the way, don't eat as much sugar as Americans, but it was calculated in a few years ago that Israelis, including children, eat 75 pounds of sugar a year. So when they say 92% of households eat waffling, a lot of waffling are being eaten by your brethren in Israel. We always have some at home, because after a meat meal, what else do you dunk in your tea? Waffling became a staple for all Israelis, and today they are nostalgic moments in history for anyone who has ever served in the Israeli army, and for young children, and for kosher Jews. Lador Vador, Lazer's Waffles, transformed his family's future, Israel's future, and the kosher world. But Esther Hecht did not know the rest of her family's story. How did her father survive? He didn't own waffle machines. His father did, and he was left in Austria. Her father never told her till the day he died the rest of the story. When she was going through her father's things, she found a lifetime worth of letters to a woman named Emmy Wacha. Esther had no idea who Emmy was, except that her father corresponded regularly with her for his entire life. Esther, being a journalist and a writer, had to go to Hungary on business and decided she would stop and visit Vienna to meet this woman her father wrote to. What Esther learned was that her parents couldn't get a visa to leave for Palestine with her grandfather. They remained in Vienna with their infant son after the Nazi invasion. On November 9th, 1938, Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass, her father was arrested and was about to be deported to a concentration camp. But he had the gold watch made from the profits of the waffling on his wrist. And he bribed a guard with the watch, and the guard let him escape. He knew it wouldn't be safe to go home, so he thought, where can I go? And he went to Emmy's house. You see, Emmy wasn't Jewish, but she had loyally worked for his father in the waffling factory, making cookies for years. Risking her own life, she hid Esther's father in her home until he could arrange to flee to Belgium, which was free. And eventually he was reunited with Esther's mother and brother in Belgium, and they escaped to the United States, where Esther was born and is today a member of Hadassah. Those Austrian waffle plates saved many lives and bred courage and survival from Jews and non-Jews. Transitions are never easy, but this one Jewish story had a very sweet ending and has been true for much of Jewish history. We Jews took something from the majority culture, in this case, Austrian wafers, and we made them Jewish. I did not even know that they had a name other than waffling, which is what we call them at our house. This week, we heard neo-Nazis shouting to remove Jews from our country right here in Charlottesville, Virginia. I was reminded once again that the pain of that earlier time, the fear and the memories, still reside within all of us. We can never allow the world to go back to a time where those voices outshout the voices of good. For every historic story of survival, for every sweet ending from transition, there were millions of lost lives and bitter experiences. We can never transition into acceptance of hate and evil, not when it is perpetrated against us or against our neighbors or those we do not know. Tonight, in the beauty and the peacefulness of this sanctuary, you tasted survival, the way one family made change not only for themselves, but for a whole nation. Shabbat is supposed to be a taste of the world to come. May we continue to taste the sweetness of acceptance and freedom. But may we always be ever mindful of the fact that it could be taken from us or others at any time. Shabbat Shalom.